Welcome to Pod of Cricket, the cricket podcast where a bunch of people sit around a microphone and talk cricket. And still joining you this week, along with Srinath. Hey, Srinath.
Hi, Tariq.
Samir. Hi, Samir.
Hi, everyone. Hi,
everyone. And the man with the booming voice. Hi, Vinayak.
Hi, I'm going to try and speak low today.
And of course, you're trying to get through to the founder of the podcast, the brainchild behind it, that is Clive. I'm not able to get through to him currently, but we will keep trying as the podcast goes along. But gentlemen, we have a lot of business to attend to. We begin with the breaking news that we are trying to process and digest as we record this podcast. Anil Kumble has stepped down as the Indian head coach, will not be traveling to the West Indies. We know this has been brewing for some time, but the way it has turned out now and knowing what we know now, we'll quickly go around the table in terms of what is your first reaction out here. We'll begin with Vinayak.
Thanks, Tariq. Thanks for starting with me. That's putting me in the spot, so I have to make sure that I'm politically correct now. But yeah, overall, this is kind of a sad situation. That is my first reaction. We knew, I mean, despite the denial from the camp as such, that there was definite disagreement between the captain and the coach. That much has been evident. I mean, when you see people like, reputed people at Cricinfo say that they know there has been issues before the Champions Trophy, you know that there was something going on, despite Kohli coming on, you know, live press conference and saying there was nothing. So that bit is not surprising. What is surprising is that Kumble telling that he just got to know about it yesterday from the BCCI after the Cricket Advisory Committee recommended for a year's extension. So that is the most interesting aspect for me as of now. The first thing that I think about, that the committee actually wanted Kumble to continue, but it's Kumble's decision now to step aside. So there has been some sort of an attempt to, I guess, mend the bond between the two, which has clearly not worked out. And that, I think, is the saddest part for me.
Samir, if we can bring you in here, your take on the saga so far, as in what's your first
I think it's really sad. First of all, when he was appointed last year, it was a good news because first time we were seeing an Indian coach into display, because after years of Duncan Fletcher, Gary Kirsten and Greg Chappell, we finally had an Indian coach and we were getting the results. It's not like, you know, we were losing games or something. I don't think we lost any series under coach Anil Kumble. So, you know, the turn of events has been really shocking. And I guess there's more to the story right now. We are yet to hear Virat Kohli's side. And I don't think he's going to speak before the West Indies tour gets over. So that's when we'll get to know the real story, why all this, you know, happened and everything.
And Srinath, if I can bring you in here to complete the roundabout on the table. We already discussed about the timing and the worries on our first podcast when we were talking about the team heading to the Champions Trophy. The right call at the moment from Kumble to walk away, or do you think there was a possibility of reconciliation?
I think it kind of became untenable beyond the point, as he has mentioned in his tweet just now. The couple of things that I feel apart from that is, irrespective of where Kumble and Kohli stand, the people have come out of this in a really awkward way of having mismanaged the whole thing at the BCCI. The timing of the advertisement for the new coach, the contract extension for Kumble and hearing out other candidates came out after the IPL, when they had 2 full months after the international season got over, and they could have done it any time before that, that we've discussed, as you said. The second thing, after so many media murmurs and rumors came out and stories came out, like when I mentioned on Cricinfo itself and other places which reported after that, why wait till the end of the Champions Trophy to tell the coach that there was an issue itself? If West Kumble says that things only unfolded yesterday. The third part is what precedent does it set, which I think is the widespread reaction on social media at this point. If somebody has repeated this Kumble, like somebody mentioned, the person from India who's coaching India after a long time, if his situation is this, then what is the successor or the next few successor coming with? And what does he really think when he takes up this role? So I think those are my immediate reactions.
Okay, and talking of the successor and whoever that might be, we sort of dread to think who are the possible people.
Say it, Tariq. Say it.
But so would a potential Sehwag coaching regime be go back to the kind we saw under Kapil Dev, for example, one that folded pretty quickly?
So I think we'll, I mean, it kind of to continue from where Srinath left off, and it pretty much tells the new coach that you can't have a disagreement with Kohli. So I'm not sure who's going to willingly walk into that. I mean, if it's Sehwag, as you know, a lot of people are saying is the front runner, and we know Sehwag is headstrong, right? I mean, he's not headstrong in the way Kumble is, but he's set in his ways. I mean, he's someone who thought coaching was not needed. So I'm utterly confused as to how is it going to be if it's Sehwag and Kohli working together, and if Sehwag knows that he's not going to disagree with Kohli, and there are going to be disagreements. So that's what baffles me the most. I mean, Kohli is basically ruling out, if it's all true, I mean, if the disagreement between Kohli and Kumble is the cause for all of this, he's basically ruling out disagreements with the new coach before we even know who that is. And that for me is the most shocking part of the whole thing. If, say, someone like Tom Moody walks in, he's going to have his own set of ideas, and, you know, he's going to come in with his implementation regime. And how long is he going to be okay with not disagreeing with Kohli? I mean, that's kind of, you know, disturbing to wonder about. That's, I mean, irrespective of who the successor is, I think that's going to be the biggest issue.
So a successor coming in a big post where disagreements might be an issue is the problem with two prominent organizations right now. One of them is the the other is the FBI.
it's a trend.
We'll only stick to the BCCI side of it. But this is an interesting point that Vinayak brings out, that does this change the coaching equation entirely?
Maybe. But I guess maybe they will try to rope in Ravi Shastri for that position, because Kohli was quite comfortable with him during his tenure.
Srinath, your take on Ravi Shastri as a possible replacement then?
I am not sure, firstly, if he's applied or is among candidates, 6-7 people is mentioned. So is he even in the running to become the coach next?
I'm sure he's not in the running, but like, I mean, Srinath did, I mean, like Samir said, he might, like, you never know, they might create a team director post again and then bring in Ravi Shastri there. But that's going to be a lot of money for the BCCI, which I'm not sure how that's going to work out. So I think Ravi Shastri not applying, his position, I mean, him coming back can pretty much be ruled out. So it's from the 4-5 people who have applied so far.
Yeah, and so I think especially with the COA or whatever is left of the COA is still around. I think it's just going to be that much harder to bring in a new candidate at this point in time. So I suppose that's something that needs to be taken into account. But irrespective, my thoughts on Ravi Shastri, I'm not pretty sure, having seen him in the commentary box for so long. The reason I say it is not because of the usual reasons, not his cliches, not his match analysis, which I respect sometimes. The problem I have here is that he's also a pure company man. So I don't know if next time there's a debate on whether Kuldeep Yadav should play in a deciding test in Dharamshala, it's going to be a difference of opinion, and the answer is going to be a straight no. And I think those kind of decisions are what the coach is there for in the setup. But a captain can't, because the captain's also focusing on his game. So whenever we raise the issue of whether the international cricket teams need a coach, the coach is there precisely for that reason, because he can spot those one or two strategic points the team can make. And especially if someone as sharp as Kumble, I think irrespective of who replaces him, it's a big, big loss to the team setup.
Okay, and we, although again, we do not know complete both sides of the story yet, so we never know what emerges over the coming few days.
We didn't discuss another candidate, Lalchand Rajput.
Mm-hmm.
He was probably the coach of India during 2007 World T20, I guess.
Yeah,
although there was called manager rather than the coach or the interim coach or anything.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, it's more of a signatory kind of post, to just accompany.
It was an interim. Yeah, it was an interim
position. Yeah.
I mean, he is a reputed figure in Indian cricket circles, in administrative circles, that's for sure. But in terms of, my biggest issue, like Srinath said, is, you know, the brains. I mean, you need cricketing brains as a coach. It's different from being a football manager, because you are actually a manager there. Like, you do a lot more than coaching. But in cricket, it is coach, right? I mean, you're telling the players where they're going wrong. You're telling the players what they need to do to improve, you know, come out of a poor run of form. And I just can't imagine, like, imagine someone being better at it than, you know, Kumble. And if he's going to be a problem for Kohli, and if you're going to get someone, I think I'm basically certain that whoever is going to replace Kumble is going to be a big step down in terms of the brains. The cricketing brains that they're going to bring in. No disrespect to Tom Moody, with all disrespect to Sehwag. It's going to be a big step down. It's going to be a big step down irrespective of who comes in. And that for me bothers the most, you know.
I'm just going to sneak in and make an additional point to what Vinayak said. I mean, I'm pretty much on the same side of things. And though we hardly pay heed to these hypocrisies on Twitter and what people say, somebody just put up a couple of tweets of Sehwag. One from about 6-7 months ago, where he said that Kumble was the best captain he played under. And recently, during and after the Champions Trophy, he's hung out with Sourav Ganguly as part of the Star Sports team. And he's come out with a statement saying, Ganguly is the best captain I played under. And coincidentally enough, Ganguly happens to be part of the committee that selects the new coach.
Yeah.
So let's not let that go there.
He was really unprofessional too. During when Kings and Punjab like got out of the tournament, he, you know, like blatantly blamed Maxwell and all other foreign players.
That's a very good point. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of where I was going with my initial thing point of view, saying, you know, Sehwag is not any less headstrong either. He has his own ego, and that was very evident when he came out and basically blasted the four foreign players for Kings 11 Punjab's exit. You know, he didn't even mince his words. I mean, if something like that is going to happen with the current team, how is that going to work out? It's just, you know, the scenarios are all sorts of disturbing. And with the very fact that we are discussing Sehwag as a coach is the most disturbing part of it for me.
I remember him speaking during a game where I think they were not able to take wickets and Sehwag was the captain. And he was asked, you know, like what he was thinking at that time. So he told that, you know, like we will concentrate on our batting rather than, you know, let them score runs, we'll concentrate on our batting.
So this classic Sehwag response, but also the whole problem with this, like Vinayak pointed out, the cricket brains issue here, that somebody needs a bigger picture to come in, especially in the modern game. So while these speculations remain, shall we move on to something a little less speculative and look back at how spectacularly and outstandingly brilliantly wrong our predictions?
I know what is coming.
What are you saying, Tariq? I called it. Pakistan was going to win the Champions Trophy. I always knew it. We can go back and listen to the podcast. No, why?
No one even predicted Bangladesh or Sri Lanka.
Yeah, I think we should just stop doing predictions, but that's for later.
Predictions are always an issue. But we now kind of segue into... there has already been much said about Pakistan coming and winning this tournament, which, of course, has been pretty tremendous for at least the game in general. But The question is, I mean, looking at India, the odd thing about it is that India kind of is behaving like Pakistan typically behaves after they get out of a tournament. coach is gone, the team is in disarray, there are questions about rifts and things like that. There are questions about places of the seniors in the squad. So let's quickly take an assessment of what India take out of this trophy. Or what good or bad did it do to the Indian team?
I'll start with that. I think the biggest positive was what we thought was going to be the biggest problem going into the tournament, the opening partnership. I remember we all talked about in our preview saying, you know, we pretty much agreed that the top of the order is going to be the biggest concern. The bowling lineup was, you know, well-rounded. The middle order seemed to be in good touch. But we, again, you know, just like our predictions, that turned out to be the biggest the biggest positive to come out of Champions Trophy for India. Dhawan, I don't know what is with Dhawan and ICC events. He just looked like a completely different player from his last stint with India. He carried on from his IPL form. I mean, he did play well in the IPL, but what he did in Champions Trophy was even better than what he did in IPL. So Dhawan and Rohit are the biggest positives. And negatives, there are quite a few. I'll let Srinath talk about that. But my biggest negative was, you know, how Ashwin and Jadeja have pretty much regressed as ODI bowlers. So,
yeah, I've got a theory on Dhawan. And I mean, it's a bit outlandish, however you look at it. But I think the majority of ICC tournaments, irrespective of whether it's played or now, they're obligated to produce flat beds of wicket, right? It's just that most of the time, most of that stuff is directly connected with TV audiences, how entertaining the match is, what will draw crowds in, what average score will make things more entertaining to the majority of the population that watches cricket. And in a bilateral series, which is where Dhawan often gets found out, boards are not under any of that, you know, any of that kind of obligations. I think still, despite what he's done, have problems against high quality fast bowling, like we saw against that Jaffa, whatever that was, by Amir during that spell. So I think against that kind of bowling, most batsmen will fail. And we've seen Dhawan falter in conditions like that in the past. So I think this is kind of a connecting the dots theory that I have with Dhawan, but what a fabulous tournament he had. I mean, there's nobody who could pretty much stop him throughout the group stages and not in the semi-final. He pretty much just owned the top of the order for India, and it was pretty much like a rock at the top of the order. Coming to the weaknesses, a couple of very obvious ones there is that the soft towards the end, mainly because they didn't get a chance to bat for the best part of the whole tournament. And again, India tried to make it about 6 years since, and Shivraj Singh and Mahendra Singh really, on most days, you could depend to take the game away from the opposition. They just didn't have their day.
Okay, Samir, what was your biggest takeaway?
My biggest take was, you know, Hardik Pandya leaving the semi-finals as a villain and then leaving the finals as a hero. So that was one positive. I guess the top order was really good. They clicked every match except the last game. Then I guess Bhuvneshwar Kumar was really superb, you know, throughout the tournament. He was, I guess, the only bowler, you know, who bowled consistent line and length, was swinging the ball rapidly. Coming to the weaknesses, there's a load of it. Ashwin and Jadeja, first of all. And I thought, you know, Ashwin seemed clueless in the final. You know, he wasn't bowling the right line. And, you know, maybe he was thinking too much. Jadeja also, I don't think, you know, he was clearly, you know, below par. And then maybe, I guess, the middle order, yes, as Srinath said, the tournament progressed, you know, our middle orders didn't get to bat, and that probably showed up in the end. So that's it from my side.
All right. So this looks like a tournament where it's kind of a blessing in disguise in the long term that India did not win it, because that would have probably masked these problems even further. Is that what you guys think? Or are you guys as...
Well, I'm not sure about blessing in disguise. That Sri Lanka, even if he had won against Pakistan in the final, that Sri Lanka defeat did show up a lot of weaknesses. And, you know, winning a tournament is always much better than not winning one, in terms of, you know, even Kohli's comfort levels going into 2019 World Cup. He would have been much more comfortable had he won a tournament already and had that monkey off the back going into 2019 World Cup. It did show up quite a few weaknesses, and there is a clear need to start thinking towards 2019 World Cup right now. I think the West Indies tour, they kind of... I don't know what the thinking was in naming the squad for that. But ideally, they should have waited till the Champions Trophy got over and maybe then figured a way to, you know, blood a few new names during the West Indies tour, so that you know, there is a statement saying, you know, we are looking ahead. That I'm not sure has happened with the squad that they have named, with basically just Rohit Sharma and Jasprit Bumrah sitting out, and we are going with pretty much the same middle order. I hope they at least, you know, try Dinesh Karthik and Rahane and all that during the series, but I think there is a desperate need right now to start looking towards 2019 and not, you know, worry about it 1 year later and then figure who is going to be the middle order and who is going to be the finisher and who is going to be the, you know, the bowling combination. I think that needs to start right now.
I think more than anything else, it was a matter of haggling with the visa office for 30 visas and goes where and keeping the media off bounds. I mean, it's too much of trouble, right, to wait till the end of the Champions Trophy.
Probably, yes. Yeah, there is an administrative angle to it. Yeah, true.
So I think,
yeah,
logistically...
No, I mean, even without... So even without the Champions Trophy, I think irrespective of the result, we should have tried... this West Indies tour should have been a chance to test the bench strength. I'm afraid we're not doing that. The squad should not have retained so many players from Champions Trophy. I mean, I can understand Dhoni to an extent because this limited overs is all he's playing, but we should have given a couple more bowlers a chance, you know, test out the middle order. The middle order desperately needs a rejig. I don't know where they're going to get that from. Maybe they're going to try Rahane, or Dinesh Karthik might play all five ODIs. I don't know what's going to happen, but I would have liked to see a little more of a, you know, let's try and build our 15-member squad to a 20-member squad kind of approach to the West Indies tour, which sadly has not happened. Maybe the lack of time, like you said, was an issue. Just to bring Tariq in, since he's just been hosting so far and getting away with putting his opinions out there. what do you think was the problem that India, the biggest problem that India faced during Champions Trophy in terms of the squad composition? And where do you stand on Ashwin Jadeja? Because this was something that I've been thinking about all day today. Wondering if it's maybe time to make Ashwin a red ball bowler and not bother with playing him in ODIs and T20s. It's probably a little too hard, I mean, radical of a thought, but I'm beginning to wonder if that might make more sense in the long term.
In a short tournament, one of the issues you always face is that there is a bit of an element of luck also. India got an assist from Pakistan in the first game because they really did not turn up. So even though it was a win, a comprehensive win, it did not really test them under any real duress or pressure. The game against Sri Lanka, I felt that they probably took it far too casually. They thought it would be a walk in the park. Did not turn out to be so. It was a match to be won with 320 odd to chase on an English ground, which even if it was relatively small on one side and things like that, a captain like Kohli is expected to be smarter than that in terms of.
Same ground as the final line, similar
total.
I think the same ground as the final and a similar total.
Oh, yes, exactly. And the South Africa game, again, they got a big assist from the opponents because South Africa seemed to be up to their old tricks. I think those things made it look far too easy for India, or maybe made it look far too simple, because this whole idea of pundits going and saying we have a set lineup and we have an outstanding bowling, I am not convinced for even one moment that we have an outstanding bowling line. That's the one problem I rail against, because much as impressive as all these guys are, they are not outstandingly good as a unit. This is one of the major issues that we are facing. Well, I know this is unpopular opinion, but Ian Bishop the other day said that it is one of the best fast bowling lineups in India he's ever seen. It could be, but it is definitely not consistent, and which is one of India's major problems, which also hurt them in the final, of course, as we all know. And that's where I think we're kind of losing out. Coming back to the Ashwin Jadeja problem, if you had asked me before the tournament, I would have been a huge Jadeja supporter and would have said that he'll be in the ODI team. But both because of the recency bias, thanks to Hardik Pandya and Jadeja's own performances, I would definitely now be swaying towards the latter. That he's somebody who probably is not as effective in limited overs as he used to be.
Anyone disappointed with Mohammad Sami not getting a single game?
Probably. They could have.
Yeah, Srinath, you can go on.
Yeah, so I think Sami is more of a wicket-taking option no matter what the situation is. I just contrast that with Bumrah, just picking up some numbers. Which is around 67 per wicket in the second innings, and that kind of tends to be overlooked most of the time. And on top of that, he concedes one full run more than he does overall. So that kind of skews the equation on Bumrah. So I think as a wicket-taking option, Sami definitely gets into the 11, but maybe the management didn't see a reason to play three fast bowlers for the best part of the tournament. I think after Umesh's performance against Sri Lanka, I think they decided that
really well in test. Views?
I mean, I don't know. Hindsight, Sami might have played. My biggest thing during the last three matches, at least, was that we were one bowler short. I wouldn't have minded Umesh getting a game back after that Sri Lanka match. He got dropped, and you know, I never saw Hardik Pandya as the fifth bowler, and you know, Kedar Jadhav coming in as the sixth bowler option when he starts leaking runs. That to me is a very weak bowling lineup with Pandya as your fifth option. As it turned out, you know, Jadeja and Ashwin both had bad matches, and then you have only two bowlers bowling well, and you have four bowlers who are not in form. That cannot be. That is not a championship winning recipe. Throughout the tournament, I didn't see a need for Kedar Jadhav as a batsman in the side. The moment it became clear that, you know, Hardik Pandya was not a good fifth bowling option, the batting lineup was deep enough with Ashwin coming in at 7, Jadeja coming in at 8, or the other way around. We had a deep batting lineup. We should have gone for an extra bowler and sacrificed one of the middle order batsmen, because Pandya was. He showed in the first match that he is capable of hitting. So have him in the lineup. Don't drop him. I mean, he, like Kohli said, we need to back a talent like him. And he showed in the final that he can step up if needed. But I think we went throughout the tournament one bowler short. And I think ultimately that cost us.
And this is ironically absolutely right, in the sense that the final felt like a throwback to the 1990s. Us being one bowler short in every match also feels a throwback to the
1990s. Yeah.
Okay, but we are kind of running out of time, but we definitely should spend whatever time we have left addressing the one good thing to come out of the championship, which was the success of Pakistan. Of course, it has been analyzed and romanticized and analyzed again romantically. And
I wish Clive was here.
I think that should be the title of the podcast. We wish Clive was here.
This episode will go down as that.
Yeah.
but quickly going around the table on your thoughts about Pakistan team. I mean, of course, underdog story and everything, but what was your personal processing of this tournament, of how it turned out for Pakistan?
Well, I think most people have said it already. Like you said, you know, it's, there's really very few things left to say that, you know, would add to. I think one of the biggest positives, before I go into the cricketing aspect, one of the biggest positives of Pakistan winning this tournament has been the quality of writing that's come out of it. The amount of great articles that we have read about Pakistan, you know, Wasman's piece and Kimber's piece, Sid Monga's signing off with his little analysis in the live blog. You know, I think that's been the biggest positive for me, to read such good stuff written about Pakistan. It's always a delight to read. There were a couple of other articles that I came across. You know, there's just been excellent stuff written about Pakistan, and deservedly so. That has been like the greatest positive in terms of the non-cricketing aspect. Cricketing aspect, it's a big statement that, you know, the cricket is not just about the big three. It's not just India, Australia and England. Not even South Africa. Only one of them even made it to the semi-final. I mean, at least two of them made it to the semi-final. Australia went back early. South Africa became, I mean, played like South Africa always does in an ICC event. So it tells me that, you know, I genuinely didn't think there was enough quality outside the top four for any of them to come this far. Bangladesh proved me wrong. Sri Lanka proved me wrong with that chase against India. And then Pakistan proved me wrong four times over. So it's just the fact that, you know, there's not, in a tournament of this magnitude, there is not much separating from these guys. That's like a big learning point for me. And to just see Pakistan celebrate with such joy, I mean, Hasan Ali's celebration was probably the high point of the tournament for me. To see him turn it around after that match against India, he kind of summed up the tournament for me perfectly for Pakistan. So bad against India and then so brilliant afterwards. It's just that one player who sums up how Pakistan's tournament went down. And that I think was the biggest, best thing to watch about, you know, how Pakistan won the trophy.
Okay, Srinath?
I'll probably go for the slightly 1 degree separated connection here, which is that I think PSL's eventually going to make things a lot better. You're going to see so many more cricketers like Shadab Khan. He was everything that Pakistan went in the first game. Same field at point, dive around, get those throws in, be so confident that he can counter his captain and ask him to review such a crucial decision. You see Hasan Ali, who is also partly a product of PSL. You see Fakhar Zaman, who's also played. And Roman Rais coming into the semi-final last minute and supporting such a spell. I think pretty much what happened to Indian cricket after the IPL game, after 3-4 years, you saw those cricketers with so much confidence that they couldn't care less about who they were playing against, and they were playing every single ball on merit irrespective of what the aura of the opposition was. So I think as we go along and as the PSL becomes bigger and these guys play with these the franchise T20 world or the international cricket world, whoever turns up in Dubai for those 3-4 weeks of action. Like I said, I think Pakistan cricket is definitely going to grow leaps and bounds. And I think what we're seeing is probably the first shoots of that. And they're going to play like this.
And Samir, your take on it?
I think the biggest thing in an ICC tournament is, you know, picking at the right moment. And that's what Pakistan did throughout the tournament. Plus, if you see three debutants coming in, and, you know, they all performed well at that time, especially Mohammad. I'll have to, you know, speak about Mohammad Amir. You know, like, just imagine if that five-year ban never happened and, you know, he would have played all those 5 years. Today, I guess, you know, he would be compared with the likes of Steyn and Mitchell Starc. And I think he's already there now. But, you know, if that fire gap wouldn't have happened, you know, maybe he would have been a little more above the level he is right now. And no doubt, Pakistan played exceptional cricket. And, you know, even Sarfraz Ahmed's captaincy was, you know, something to laud, because he was making very brilliant changes during, I guess, the semi-finals against England. So, yeah, I think hats off to them. They played brilliant cricket and they deserve to win the tournament.
All right. And this is not the narrative maybe the ICC would have thought of. or a lot of the other people would have thought of. But ultimately, like Smith rightly said, it's the deserving team that won the tournament, and that's what makes it even more romantic. But we'll see if the Champions Trophy actually returns.
Yeah.
Question mark hanging over its own fate.
It is returning. 2021 is in India.
No, but again, there was a statement that said, you know, there are doubts over the future of the tournament.
On it as yet, because Dave Richardson is kind of siding towards two World T20s rather than having the Champions Trophy in the alternate year.
I don't remember one edition of the Champions Trophy where we didn't talk about the future of the Champions Trophy at the end of the Champions Trophy.
Yeah, beginning from 1998.
Yeah. Yeah, almost always at the end of the Champions Trophy, we discuss whether we are going to have a next one. But yeah, let's see.
We should definitely have it.
Yeah.
All right. The bad news is that we are almost at the end of our time. So that's about all the time we have this week on Pod of Cricket. Quite a lot of ground to cover, but hopefully we did that well. You can follow us on at Pod of Cricket on Twitter. You can get all the podcast links out there as well. And you can follow the people on Pod of Cricket as well. Our brainchild, and today unfortunately absent live, is at Vanilla Wala. You can follow Vinayak at VinayakKM. You can follow me at Tariq Laskar. You can follow Samir at Hitman Cricket. And you can follow Srinath at the incredibly complicated _ PEEWS. So thank you all for joining us, guys. Another great discussion.
And let's do it soon. Yeah.
And let's dedicate it to Clive.
We're dedicated to Clive.
We give the airtime to Clive just to make sure that he's not missed.